click kaya959.co.za to download the Kaya Biz podcast.
It's my house.
Yes, it's my house and I live here, in the voice of Diana Ross. Tonight, we're taking a look at the impact of the 25 basis point cut in the repo rate. That does take the repo rate, prime lender, the repo rate to 7%. It does mean that for you and I, prime, the prime lending rate is 10.5%. So what that means, if you go to a bank in an institution and you say, hey, I'd like to loan this particular amount of money for at prime, 10.5% is what you'd be essentially be paying. But there is always room to negotiate. Prime less is where you want to find yourself. Prime plus does also happen. And that's just the additional percentage or increase in interest that the banks do put in based on your individual risk assessment. To tell us what this means for the property space, we're joined by Reina Kriek, Managing Director at Sentinel Homes. Reina, thank you so much for your time and your patience with us. A few gremlins in the system, but we live to see another day.
The gremlin gave me a chance to savor some Mexican food that my family had prepared for us.
Stunning.
Not entirely unwelcome.
Oh, stunning. You know what I love about the example that you've shared with us? It reminds us about why we do what we do, right? You're with your family, you're enjoying your meal, and you're doing this in your home. And that's what all of us want, a home where we can spend time together with loved ones and create memories. But homes can also be expensive. But of late, we do see that interest rates have been playing an influence on our affordability here. So first things first, I think just your immediate reaction to the interest rate cut, surely this is good news for property owners.
So, I mean, I think we'll take any bit that we can get at this point, Gugu. I'm personally not a fan of the current policy direction that the SARB has taken. I'm personally of the view, and it's shared by many people behind closed doors, but all of them seem to be a little frightened of putting this out in the public. But we have real interest rates in South Africa that are much too high. And since you did such a nice job of explaining interest rates at the top, let me go through it as well. So the real interest rate is the interest rate that we're paying. Let's say that's the prime rate minus the inflation, the amount by which money is losing value. And if you make that little calculation, then you get to what is called the real interest rate. And the real interest rate at the moment is about 7.5%, which is exactly double the historical average. Why? Why is it exactly double the historical average? You see, what the Reserve Bank has done is that they've taken this inflation targeting framework and through very, very precise messaging, very consistent messaging, they've encouraged all of us to focus on the magnitude of their move rather than on having to justify the real interest rate. Because the real interest rate is the actual money that you are paying when you take out debt. And the fact of the matter is that at a real interest rate of 7.5%, we can't have growth capital formation in the country's economy. By which I mean the numbers don't work for building things like pipelines and factories and housing projects, because the real cost of capital is too high.
Yeah. And let's go back to this theme of the real interest rate, right? And I'm hoping that you can, you know, further simplify it for us in terms of our understanding. You know, what are these drivers? Because as you mentioned, you know, there are several drivers to inflation, you know, demand, cost push, and even the exchange rate and currency. When it comes to interest rates, you know, why is it just not that simple for us to see, you know, one particular metric that we actually feel its impact in our pockets?
So at the moment, the philosophy that is used to determine interest rates in South Africa is called inflation targeting, by which we say that the Reserve Bank, if the inflation is too high, in other words, if money is losing value too quickly, they put up the interest rate. Why do they do that? Because they're trying to dampen demand in the market. If the interest rates are higher, people spend less, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so if interest rates are chronically high, which is what they have at the moment, the real interest rate is 7.5%, which is double the historical average, then people are spending less. That is what the philosophy tells us. And why do we want people at the moment to spend less in the South African economy? We don't want that. We want people to spend more. Our growth is in the doldrums. The economy is not growing. We're shedding jobs on a national level. It's a disaster. And the SARB has good reasons to do what they're doing at the moment. I just don't think that they're doing the things the right way around. And this is a thing that I hear often when I speak to people who are in the financial services industry, economists and others who work for financial services businesses. It's just that no one, because the messaging of the SARB is so consistent and because there are all sorts of ramifications to criticizing them, this has become sort of a holy cow in our public discourse. No one seems to criticize them because it is an institution that works, you know, so we're trying to wrap them in cotton wool and protect them. But they're doing something that I don't understand, and they're not explaining to us sufficiently, in my opinion.
What risk do we face if we continue to, I guess, in your word, mollycoddle, you know, the SARB, especially because you're quite right, we face with the juxtaposition of they are a respected institution, they're independent, yes, and they are doing, yes, their work, but yes, we also don't want them to think that they can, you know, the tail that wags the dog, essentially.
Exactly. And everything in life, when you get public power, there should be accountability. And so to the extent that we've built a system, because we're too scared to break something that works, to the extent that we as the public have accepted this system where there is limited accountability for our central bankers, we are getting what we deserve. Because, in fact, they should also be held accountable because they are also exercising the public power. And what is the public power? It's power that is exercised in all of our names collectively. And so I have great respect for the people who sit there. They're just entirely too hawkish. They are strangling the economy, which is costing people job creation opportunities. It's costing us gross fixed capital formation in the economy. Things like factories are not being built. Houses are not being built. We have a 3 million formal housing unit backlog in South Africa. Households earning less than 26,000 rand a month. There are 3.3 families for every one formal housing unit. That is why we have squatter camps, because the market is not providing the housing. And why is the market not providing the housing? Well, one of the reasons is real interest rates are too high.
Reina, I love this because you're taking us down on an economics conversation here that does, you know, fundamentally speak to then what we see in the property space. But as you say, the SARB has been a bit too hawkish. Help us contextualize. What do you hope they would have done, or how they would have reacted, especially given the most recent inflation print, which has been sub 3% since September, October last year? And given that they do focus on a future mandate of softening inflation, is this still sufficient, or does it need a complete overhaul of the mandate or its partnership with fiscal consolidation? I guess my question is, they haven't acted accordingly. What was the ideal positioning or stance they should have taken in the past?
So I think what motivates the SARB, and I'm trying to have sympathy for their argument and for their thinking, is that they say that if we had a lower inflation target, then interest rates would be lower in the long term, and lower inflation would be good for the poor and for the economy, and lower inflation would be good for the gross fixed capital formation going forward. In other words, they're taking the long view. The other thing is that if the inflation target is lower, then due to the theory of purchasing power parity, the rand will devalue at a slower rate against the leading basket of international currencies, which means that we'll import less inflation over the long term. And so we're balancing the needs of the richer people who consume and the poorer people who need capital formation and job creation. And now, given that we are in this sort of pallid inflation environment where inflation is an exceptionally flaccid 2.8 to 3%, they see a sort of a once-in-a-blue-moon opportunity to now fix the inflation target at a lower rate of 3% rather than the previous anchor, which they had at 4.5%, the mid-range of the target. Yes. And now this, unfortunately, is not how it works. The Reserve Bank can't just do what they like. They have to obtain the mandate from Treasury. And you already saw this week that the Minister Gordon Ngwana came out and said,
yes,
no, you can't just decide this unilaterally. We need to first go through the process. Because what the minister needs is broadening tax base and a growing economy so that he can increase the tax revenue, because we have a lot of fiscal problems in this country. The government does not have enough money. And so this is not, in my opinion, the correct time to do it, because we need to spend ourselves out of the current rut that we are in. And the way of doing that is by encouraging households and the private sector to spend. And to do that, we need a lower real interest rate. It's unjustifiable at 7.5%.
Yeah, got you. Jeez, Reina, I'm loving this conversation because you've really taken us into, you know, the depth of the technicalities of this particular argument before understanding the impact it has on us as South Africans. And the synopsis you've provided, I guess, gives us that understanding that this is not a decision we as consumers need to just view lightly, because of course we want lower interest rates. Of course we want easier supply and access to credit. But we also want a growing economy, you know, where we're not just tied and limited to the current credit provisions that we're exposed to and might even struggle to pay off. But let's contextualize the most recent interest rate cut and maybe, you know, cumulatively, the rate cuts that we've seen since November last year and their impact on South African households and affordability to purchase property. Have we seen improvement in the rates of affordability and qualification of home loans?
We will have. So if we use a sort of average home loan amount of, say, capital amount of, say, 1.5 million rand, which is actually the average at the moment, it's much too high. The average should be lower, but that's a problem about gap housing supply, which is for another conversation. And the average home loan is around sort of 1.5 million rand on average. And so the cumulative rate cuts of 4 times 25 basis points adds up to 1 whole percentage point, which means that the average household on a 1.5 million rand home loan has cumulatively saved about 1,000 rand a month per installment, which puts 1,000 rand in their pocket every month. But if you're paying a 1.5 million rand home loan, then you earn about, say, 45 to 50,000 rand a month. So the extra 1,000 rand is almost symbolic and isn't really. It's probably going to just disappear in some form of excess sort of consumption of luxuries.
Yeah, low rates in Texas, electricity, because that's been increasing.
Mm. It could go there. It could go to rates and taxes and electricity. All of these managed prices that we all pay, especially once you're a homeowner, you pay all of these managed prices like municipal taxes. And I mean, somewhere like the city of Joburg, municipal taxes are out of control. If you take their compound annual growth rate, there are all these fixed charges that are being introduced, whatever, all of those serve to stymie the market and the supply of housing. And what we're essentially funding is graft and corruption and misapplication of funds. We saw again this week, once again, the Minister of Finance said to the Mayor of Joburg, Mr. Dada Morero, you must rein in the public purse there in the city of Joburg, otherwise I'm going to stop sending you national money if you don't give me a plan.
That 89 billion.
Because the fact of the matter is that accountability also needs to come to the local authorities in our country. It's the day of reckoning will come at some point, I hope, but we don't accept this anymore. Because that is also public power being exercised in all of our collective names and being totally mismanaged and our money essentially stolen. Hopefully that will end soon. So given all of these price increases, the managed prices and whatever, the cumulative on average 1,000 rand a month saving in the installment is not going to do a lot. It also doesn't go very far towards improving the affordability of housing for the average South African household. You now need about 3,600 rand per month less in income to qualify for a 1.5 million rand bond than you would have needed before the rate cutting cycle started. So not material at the average price point. And so these cuts in the interest rates are largely symbolic to this point, because if we use, as I said, the long-term average real interest rate, then we should in fact expect 350 basis points of interest rate reductions in the near term. And even according to the very sort of dovish sentiments that we had from the last MPC press release from Mr. Khanyahu, that is unlikely to materialize. He sees about 25 bps cuts in the future, which is much too little and probably going to be much too late.
Got you. Yo, Reina, there's a lot that we need to distill. And I can tell and I understand the positioning that you're in terms of the political analysis, how that plays a role in the economics and fundamentally our pockets as consumers. But for anyone who is in the property market, whether it's those who want to buy or those who want to sell, you probably get this question quite often. Is it a buyer's market?
Depends where you are. If you're in Gauteng, it seems like it is a buyer's market most places. If you are in Kebega or in the Eastern Cape, or if you are in Buffalo City in the Eastern Cape, or if you are in the Western Cape, then it is most definitely not a buyer's market. It's more a seller's market.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, in the Cape, stock is so scarce that estate agents are running around the streets looking for stock because no one has anything that they would like to sell. So what's happening in our country is that it's becoming a tale of two countries, unfortunately. Those places that on average are better managed, The small amount of better management is compounding over time, which is why, for instance, if we were to just single out the Western Cape, because it's where I live, you're also in Cape Town at the moment. In the Western Cape, the joblessness number is only 2/3 of the national average, which means that the national average is actually brought down quite significantly by the fact that joblessness in the Western Cape, as measured by Stats SA, is only about 23 or 24%. And that's the compound effect of infrastructure being built and the public purse being spent in the public interest. And don't get me wrong, the Western Cape government and all of the local governments in the Western Cape are not doing a sterling job. They're just doing sort of a middling job, but that's good enough when compared to all of the other places in our country where things are collapsing. And that should stop.
Challenges all around, yeah. And let's also hope that the agriculture sector is not too harshly hit and impacted by the Trump trade tariffs, that there are some interventions that will be put in place.
We can only
hope. We can only hope. Thank you so much for your time this evening. Really appreciate your time, Reina, and various insights and expertise on some of the challenges we face in our economy, but also some solutions we can put forward. Wishing you a great evening. Thank you again.
Back to the Mexican food for me.
Yes, back to the Mexican food for you. Reina Creek is the managing director at Sentinel Homes, joining us this evening here on Kaya Biz.
It's my house!
Kaya Biz with Gugule Tumfupi, Monday to Thursday, 6 to 8 p.m. on Kaya 959.
Click kaya959.co.za
to download the Kaya Biz podcast.